Yo, son.
One app is life.
It's not the one you should be underestimating.
Sasquatch, Godzilla, King Kong, Loch Ness.
We rap nerd now here, right?
Like, I can tell you were a nerd. It's primal.
And that's raw, Carhartt girl.
Speaking of sneaky big tits.
Are you out there fucking?
I'm doing that.
Years ago, I bought a millionaire Griffin. This was years ago, bro. Years ago.
Cypher Sounds. Peter Rosenberg. One app is life.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Cypher Sounds is God knows where, but I am in the original Juan Epp room. I don't even know if you appreciate, first of all, my guest is TDE's own Reason in the building.
What's the deal? What's the deal?
What's happening? Carson, right?
Yes, Carson.
Carson, California's own.
Carson, California.
I don't even know if you know this room right here. This is the Juan Epp original studio, where the most legendary of legendaries have happened.
I did not know that.
We haven't done an episode in here in, I'm talking years ago. This might be 6-7 years ago, but this is where the Jay-Z interview happened. This is where so many classic moments happened. Anyways.
Oh, that's fire.
Happy to have you, bro.
No, I'm happy to be here. I know the first time we met, it was quarantine. It was a weird time. And yeah, it was just the screen and whatnot. So
listen, I really like to pretend that it can be the exact same on the screen because I love not having to do shit, but it's not the same.
It's not the same.
It's not the same.
It's not the same.
Now, you could get there. Like, if you already know someone really well.
That's what I was going to say. If the rapport is there, you can kind of like, you know, because you guys have that history and whatnot. But
if you don't know.
It's your first time meeting them, it's like, it feels like a Zoom date.
It
feels like a Zoom date. Yeah.
And that was your last album.
That was my last album.
What was the name of the last album again?
New Beginnings.
That was New Beginnings 2021?
2020. Yeah, it's been a while, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah, well, also, like, time, what is time now?
Yeah.
The last few years fucked over time so
completely.
Much.
I still feel like we are literally owed a year. Like, I think that anything that happened in that time, like, I think everything should have stopped. The same way life stopped, rent and mortgage should have stopped, like, everything, in my opinion. If you have to pay your registration, don't got to pay it that year.
I know, because everyone lost out.
You lost out, and you still had to pay for it. Like, we didn't go anywhere, but you still got to pay for your registration.
Now, let's talk about what's your exact timeline? You signed to TD in what, 18?
I got announced in 18. So I signed in 2017, got announced officially. So that's usually like the official date that everybody has on there. Announced in 2018 in August. And then like right after that, went on tour with J-Rock for my first joint. So I dropped my first project September 2018. And I was right on the road after that. So,
With J-Rock. And then you dropped again in 20.
And then I dropped again in 20.
And now you're here in 23, dropping at the end of the month.
Exactly. But I will say the first one didn't really count as an album because I dropped it before I was signed to the label. And Top wanted to put it out to show people why he signed me. So that was the project that he discovered me off of. We just literally just took it down, put a different
reissue.
Album cover.
It was a reissue.
Different album cover on it. Right and back up. Yeah, literally.
Just give people the brief version.
Yeah.
Of how Top Dog came to get on to what Reason was doing.
Yeah, so I was kind of rocking out in L.A., just doing little shows, throwing my own events and whatnot. And Q's manager, his name is Keem, he ended up discovering me through a childhood friend. I was throwing my first headlining show, and I booked out the venue, did all that. And Keem, being supportive, he bought 20 tickets and just brought a bunch of TDE niggas there. And one of them happened to be Top Son, Musa.
Shouts to Musa.
Yeah, meet Musa. About a month and a half later, meet Top, playing records for 3 hours. It looks like he hates all of them. And then I leave that night. And then the next morning, he called me like, yo, you know, it's not official yet, but I think my pops want to sign you. And after that, it was over.
You get into some of this on the album, sort of like the expectations and things that come with being TDE.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, I think we're now starting to get to a place finally of where TDE can be thought of as simply a label where different people exist in different ways.
Yes, yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
you
are TDE. You are not Black Hippie, right? Like, exactly. We've gotten to that place. Yes. But it took a while where it seemed like everyone who got signed, the immediate questions are like, yeah, where's your Kendrick relationship?
That, exactly.
You know, now, of course, we're in the post-Kendrick TDE era, right? Yeah. So we're entering now a whole new situation. Yeah. But yeah, like, so I'm guessing it must be a real blessing. And by the way, just full disclosure, like,
Top is one of my favorite people.
Gotcha.
You know, he's of important people in the industry. I would say no one has been kinder or more appreciative or respectful of me than Top.
Like he has a huge heart. I'll tell people that all the time. Top is like the biggest hearted dude that I've ever met, especially for somebody that's been so successful, has so much money. You know,
and he's
what I mean?
And he's just loyal.
He's just like, loyal. Yeah.
I don't ever feel, no matter what is happening in the world, like Top answers the phone.
Yeah.
Like that's just kind of the kind of dude that he is.
Yeah.
But so I'm guessing with all the blessings of that though, there must have been periods over the last 5 years that were frustrating because people have made up expectations.
Yes. People, not only do they make up expectations, you know, TDE fans are the kings and queens of conspiracy. So they also...
Tell me about this. Cause I don't really know. I'm not in touch with the TDE fans like I used to be back in the day.
Yeah,
What are they like? Yeah,
It's like anything that is put out there, even remotely, they take it and run with it. I've had TDE fans tell me that I'm the reason that Kendrick Lamar isn't dropping, like as if reason is that important to where... If a Kendrick Lamar album isn't loaded up, you know what I mean?
Reason is the reason.
Reason's
the only reason.
Reason's the only reason that Kendrick Lamar, you know what I mean, isn't dropping. And so you deal with those pressures where you're putting your heart and soul into the music, and every single time you drop before people even listen, they're just like, okay, well, where's Kendrick? Where's Q? Where's Rock? And you have to kind of like work through that and navigate that while still trying to remain, thankful and gracious. Like you have to still big up the ones that came before you, but then also try to navigate around people constantly shoving these big shadows, you know what I mean, in your face every single time that you're trying to put out some music, trying to put out some content, et cetera.
Well, yeah, you don't want to ever like, you don't want to ever sound like you're shitting
exactly
on them.
Yeah.
On
yeah.
either the artists or the fans.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you want to gain their support, but also sometimes you kind of might want to be like, yo, but get off my nuts. That's not what's happening.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't care about, like, where's Kenny? I don't give a fuck.
Right, that's not, he's living his own life.
He's living his own life. Like,
and my projects aren't based on solely who else I can get that you're into.
1,000%. And that's what it is, like, you know, with the TDE fan. Now, the newer TDE fans, they don't really operate that way. But, like, especially during the times, like, when I came in, I always tell people, I feel like I came in at the hardest part it was to be a new TDE member because... Dot had been gone for years. SZA had been gone for years. Zay, don't even get me started. So it was constantly, where is this? Where is this? Where is this?
Oh, you mean how hot they were at that time?
And not only how hot, but how missed they were. They hadn't dropped a project in years.
So when I'm trying to promote,
you know, or, you know, break in, every single thing is like, where is Zay? Like, you know, y'all pushing this new dude. Where's Kendrick? Y'all pushing this new dude. You haven't even gave us Q. You haven't even gave us Zay. And I even used that going into my last project, New Beginnings. I was like, okay, well, let me make sure I put Q on my album. Let me make sure I put Soul on my album. Let me make sure I put Zay on my album. You know, so I had a record with him, Zay and Jid, and record with Q. I tried to get a Dot verse, but I ended up only getting Dot ad-libs. And so it was frustrating, especially because people were asking you questions about these dudes. When I first got signed, Dot and Dave were kind of already out the door. The public just didn't know.
Right.
And so then you're having people like, where's your Dot verse? I'm like, well, Dot's not even really.
But I can't tell you that.
Exactly.
It's not my place.
Exactly.
But
and then you have the fans that's like, oh, you know, Dot clearly doesn't, you know, co-sign for this dude. He doesn't have a Dot feature. I'm like, nah, he's just not TDE anymore.
Right. You but you don't mean? Know that yet.
But you don't know that yet. And I can't tell you, but I just have to, you know.
I got
to
keep doing my shit.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that must, did that ever add stress to the relationships with the artists themselves or no? It just stayed separate and it was kind of an annoyance, but you didn't let it get in the way of how you personally interacted with everybody.
It was definitely separate. It wasn't like it added stress on the relationships. But then again, there were also other relationships in the camp that just didn't exist. Like I don't have a relationship with SZA. But if I said that at that time, it would be looked at as like, oh my God, like, you know.
Is there a problem?
Exactly. You know what I mean? Like, is there? And I'm like, I don't have a relationship with SZA. I don't really have a relationship with Q. It's there. If I see him, it's cool. But I don't have I only at the time had a relationship with Soul, Rock, and Sir at the time. You know what I mean? And so, you know, you get these questions and whatnot. And it's just like, if you say it, it's going to be looked at as like, oh, it's a thing. Like TDE isn't, you know, they're not cool anymore and people are beefing. And then.
No, they're just like, a real label.
It's no longer the, you know, that family mob that people came into it.
Well, yeah, because at first it really was. It was just you. They were all together all the time.
All the time. You know what I mean? And now it is an actual label. This is a record label now.
Yeah. And like, Yeah, you're not just kicking it with SZA. It's like, no, she's one of the biggest stars on earth.
Like she lives 40 miles away in this big ass crib in Calabasas. Like, I'm in Carson. Like, I don't know what you want me to do about that. Like,
yeah, just call SZA and come through.
It's like, they'd be like, oh, this record would sound great with SZA. Why isn't SZA on this? Like, Reason doesn't know what he's doing. I'm like, you don't think I want SZA? You don't think I want SZA on my album? You don't think that I would call and want SZA? You think
if it was that easy, just like, yo, can you send SZA through to get this?
It's like, bro, And so those were the frustrations. But if I said that, then it would spark conversations like, well, SZA isn't fucking with TD. It's like, no, SZA's just an artist on a label. And Cardi doesn't do a record with everybody on Atlantic. You know what I mean? Like, this is what we are
right now. Yeah. Right. Now, that's a fascinating situation. Yeah. So how long were you at it? First of all, let's start with Carson.
Yes, yes.
Tell people exactly where Carson is, and does it have its own hip hop culture all to itself?
Yes, for sure, for sure. So Carson is right next to Compton, Long Beach, Gardena. I always tell people Carson is like at the center of actual LA, because you have LA and then you get to downtown in Hollywood, and that's just like its own separate universe. You know what I mean? But when you get into actual LA, Carson's in the middle of Watts, Long Beach, Compton, like all of those things. So it's kind of like the core, and Carson was the first, and it's still like the only city in LA that the middle and upper class is black. It's like 85% black. So it was like the first neighborhood that was like damn near all black, but people are doing pretty well. You know
so
what
it's,
I mean?
So it is better economically than the other places you named?
Yes, exactly.
Compton,
exactly.
Watts, etc.
Compton, Watts, Gardena, Long Beach. It's better economically than all of those. So I moved to Carson. I was actually born in South Central, but it wasn't safe. And my mom, basically my neighbor, came and got into an argument with his wife one day and shot her and killed her in front of everybody. And so my
including
mom...
You?
Yes, yeah. I was like outside in the yard. I couldn't go outside in the street because that was like the rule. We can't go past the gate. But we were all outside when it happened. And that day, my mom packed all our shit up, moved us into a hotel, and was like, every day after this, after work, I'm going to go and try to find a house. And so we ended up finding this like kind of rundown two-story house in Carson, but it was nice, and saw these black people and they're doing better. So now this is when I'm starting to realize that I can do other things besides gangbang and sell drugs.
How old were you at this time?
I was eight.
Do you have, I'm sure obviously it's a story you've told a million times. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty like life-changing, formulating story. Do you have actual memories of the day that you saw it happen?
1,000%. Like that day, and it's crazy because I don't remember a lot of things as a kid, but I remember that day because it was just so much different. We used to always talk about if somebody starts shooting, like there's certain things that you do. When I was a kid, like my mom would tell us, if somebody has a gun, you run in the house, you jump in the tub, you guys dug down. Like these were things that we talked about.
As an 8-year-old, 7-year-old,
Yeah, 6-year-old, 5-year-old, you know, because she wasn't always there. There was like a 2-hour gap between my dad and my mom being home, and my sister was with us taking care of us. So these were like the routines. And so it was my sister and my cousin outside. They were outside the gate. Me and my brother were in the front yard. And when it happened, me and my brother just froze until my sister and cousin like grabbed us. And then we ran in the house and they put us in the tub and whatnot. So I remember that vividly. And then the cops were out there for like the next 6 hours. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, it was something that I vividly remember. I remember that entire transition, the hotels, the finally getting the house and all of that, and me, oh, now I can learn how to ride a bike. Like, now I can, you know, meet the other kids on the block because I can leave the fence. You know what I mean? Like, so I remember all of those things.
So they were like blatant rule changes because the environment changed.
Extreme rule changes. And for the better. That's why I always tell people I can say I'm from South Central, but Carson is what allowed me to have a childhood. Like, it allowed me to be able to do other things. Like, my best friend at 7 years old in South Central was already selling drugs for his pops. He was the kid that would go to the door and then run out to the car, you know what I mean? Because what cop is going to stop a 7-year-old? So those were the things that people were already doing, and Carson kind of gave me that other life that I can do other things.
And that gives you also such a fascinating insight into just how important like class is in
1,000%.
America. Yeah. Like race is obviously super important, and class is super important because the experience... Like as music has taken us recently through like Tyler and the whole entire Odd Future thing, you see all the different experiences of black folks in California.
Exactly.
It is not a uniform experience
at all.
But you got to see directly two
night and day, two different things. You know what I mean? And that was also like a big purpose of this album. It was the thought process of, like, so on my street, my family owned like 5 houses on that South Central Street. And so all of my cousins were there. So when I moved and then I would come back and visit my cousins, I saw the difference in the environment and what the product is, because I'm coming back to visit my cousins these are my cousins I saw damn near every day, and our lives are drastically going different directions because of the move. You know what I mean? And so it allowed me to understand, like, the porch that you're on, you know, determines where you are or what you're going to be doing. And not to say that you can't do anything else, because, of course, there are the anomalies. There's the hoes that come from that and then, you know, go to be Jay-Z. But it's really hard if you've never seen anything else.
So when you go to Carson as an 8-9-year-old,
yeah,
what did you start, like, culturally getting into? Because I think it's interesting that you say you're from Carson and not South Central, because obviously people would always want to claim South Central because it makes you sound hard.
Makes you sound cooler or hard. Yeah, whatever the case may be.
But you also know that culturally, we don't really form until after age 8.
Exactly.
In terms of
what we actually do, you know what I mean?
Like the interests we have. So what did you first start getting into culturally growing up as a kid in Carson?
Some of the things were the same. It was just dialed down. So, like, I still went through, like, the gangbanging stuff and trying to decide if I wanted to be a part of that or not. It's just, in South Central, you're basically forced to do that. In Carson, it's like, oh, I have a choice. I don't have to.
You could be those kids, or you could be skater kids,
You know what I mean? So for me, I kind of chose, like, the athlete route. I still hung out with a lot of the gang niggas, but they because you play sports, a lot of them just kind of, like, let you, you know, be around for certain stuff and then send you home for other things. And I got into the life. I got into the little skateboard movement for a while. I got into the little jerk era for a while. Like, I was able to experience all of those things and kind of just branch out and see what I actually had interest in and what I didn't.
What kind of sports were you playing?
I was playing basketball. I played basketball my whole life. I played basketball up until basically I started doing music. So I didn't start doing music until 2015.
And so you were a pretty serious ball player?
Yeah. I was supposed to go overseas and play in Greece. And I kind of, my college experience kind of made me fall out of love with it. It kind of became a real, real business in college. And then I also had, like, some racist stuff going on with my coach, where it was like this weird thing the NAACP had to get involved.
Whoa. We can't just, this is why we're doing the podcast. We can't blow past these things. So you played high school series, what high school?
Played high school at Carson and Narbonne High. And then I went to junior college because I got accepted to go to USC. My dad worked at USC my entire life. So I got accepted and I could have went for free, but I really wanted to play basketball. I wasn't good enough to play at
USC. So I got to choose now between the free education SC or playing basketball. Lesser school, but a place where you could play.
Exactly. So I went to junior college. I played 2 years at Cerritos Junior College. Got a scholarship to a small school in Iowa, which was
what
weird.
What school was that?
Northwestern State.
Northwestern State. Now, what division is that?
Division two.
Okay.
Division two. So
Division two.
I played there for 2 years, and the situation with my coach just kind of turned me off of the whole thing.
So what happened?
It's funny because I didn't see the signs when I was getting recruited by him. He would say weird things, and I just kind of never really noticed it. Like, he was like, you know, you're going to be one of the only black kids in the neighborhood, so you're going to be like the black speck on the white wall. And I would never kind of, like, notice these little things until I got to the school. And then I realized that, okay, he only recruited me because the year before they were in a tournament and ran into a black guard. The guard gave him 50. So he was like, let's go get a black guy to guard the other black guy, literally. Like, he told me that, like, out of his mouth, like, let's go get the black guy to guard the other black guy. He would have conversations with me like, you know, black people are the soul. He said Mexicans are the hustle, and white people are the brain. If you put them all together, you know, the body works well, but if you had to choose one, like, wouldn't you rather be the brain? Like, these are, like, real conversations that he would have with me. And, you know, as a kid that just wanted to play basketball, I would kind of ignore a lot of them just because I didn't want to get on his bad side because I wanted to play.
Because you'd already made the decision at that point? Like,
I was already there, you know what I mean? Like, so I was already about, like, 6 months in and there. And, you know, I was playing a lot of minutes, but we used to
This is 2013?
This is, 2013. So I was playing a lot of minutes, but we would have weekly meetings with the coaches. And every single meeting, he was just saying these things. He would say the N-word in meetings. And
give him more context.
He would find examples to say it. Like, he'd be like, so if we're in a crowd of people, you know, you have to learn how to behave. So if we're in a crowd of people, you're not going to walk up to me and be like, what's up, my nigga? And I would just be blown, like, I can't believe that this
You could
is,
have used so many examples of what not to do
of
without
just what
saying,
not to do without doing that. You know what I mean? And so it was a
This
constant.
Is one of those things where if you were to isolate one thing and that was all that ever happened, you probably go like, oh, that made me feel weird, but I'm not going to take that much.
That was literally how I felt. But then,
right, but then now you look back, you're like, wait a second. This is so many different things.
Yes,
and I think
yes.
it's important to point this out because, you know, 2013 is a lifetime ago
yeah.
with regard to someone in his position.
Yeah.
Like, I would have to imagine that in 2023, if the exact same thing were to repeat itself, even if he was doing the same stupid thing of yeah. being like, I'm going to go get a black guy to cover the
yeah.
black guy.
Yeah.
I have to imagine in 2023, he wouldn't talk the way he was talking in 2013.
But this is the scary thing is that it's like, he still has the job. You know what I'm saying? So, like, for me, it's like it showed me, like...
All right, well, so then hold on. So play out what happened. How did we get to the whole...
Okay, so we get there because now I'm a senior, and I'm now at a point where I'm kind of realizing, like, you know, I don't know if I want to play overseas. And so I'm starting to have the thoughts of, you know, maybe basketball isn't the career path. And in this instance, I'm also starting to fall in love with music because I had a MacBook and I'm recording songs on my MacBook. So I'm like, I kind of want to do music when I get back home. So now at this point, I'm like, okay, I'm willing to talk up and say something. And so I told my mom what happened. She was pissed because she
which
didn't know.
Which specific thing?
Which specific thing did I tell my mom?
Yeah.
I told her everything.
Okay.
So at this point, I got on the phone with her and just told her, like, yo.
Was there one thing that happened that was, like, the thing that went a bridge too far?
Well, mom, I got, like, a real black mom. So as soon as she heard white coach racist, she didn't even need the examples. So she was already, like, she was already there. You know what I mean? Like, she was already
She'd
at
been
the
waiting
airport.
For this moment.
She was, like, at the airport going through security while I'm telling her the rest of the story. You get what I'm saying? So I tell her, but I end up, you know, having a long conversation telling her everything. And my teammates, shout out to them, because they're in this, you know, predominantly white town. And it was about three of them that they would notice these things. And they even, when the NAACP stuff got involved, they even co-signed as witnesses as some of these things happened because they could see the difference clearly, like, between, you know, how the coach would treat them and versus how he would treat me. They could clearly see it.
And had that become a conversation with them prior to it exploding?
Yeah, really we they would come to me after practice sometimes and be like, I'm really sorry that you got to go through this shit. Like, but I wouldn't even say anything. And they would just walk up to me and be like, yo, bro, I'm really sorry you got to go through this shit. Just know that we're happy that you're here. Like, they would say things like that automatically, you know what I mean? And that's what kind of made the experience a little bit better because I knew that my teammates, you know, were rocking with me and I didn't have to think that they were looking at me the same way.
The coach was.
The coach was.
All right, so you tell your mom the story.
Yeah.
She comes in.
She comes out there and my mom's a paralegal, so she's very good with her pen and, you know, doing all of that. So
where in Iowa is this?
Orange City, Iowa.
Orange City.
It's like 3 hours north of Des Moines.
So 3 hours north of Des Moines.
Des Moines,
Iowa. How far from Davenport?
I want to say like two.
Okay, so it's two. Out there.
It's out there. It's like...
It's Field of Dreams, Iowa.
It's like, yeah, like two restaurants in the town, two fast food places, one gas station.
Okay.
And
this is that, America.
Is that...
It's America, baby. You out in America.
Yeah, is that like Mitt Romney came and visited my school. Like,
wow.
Yeah, I'm so scared because there's a picture. So I'm very big on experiences. So I'm like, you know, coming from all black neighborhood, it's like every election... Democrats, niggas, we here. You don't even have to know anything about the candidates. And so when Mitt Romney was coming to my school, I'm like, I want to hear what he got to say because I've never, you know, did it or whatever. But in order to get into the conference, you had to take a picture with Mitt Romney. So there's a picture out there with me.
Yo, that's hilarious.
There's a picture out there with me and Mitt Romney.
By the way, life is so insane
yeah.
that you fast forward. That picture has aged so many different ways because now relative to the Republican Party, I would take a picture with Mitt Romney.
That's what I'm saying. But
it's
crazy.
At the time, though,
bro,
that's wild.
And this is when Obama is trying to get elected. And so I have so many, like that's why I say, like, my perspective, especially, like, when it comes to the music, I'm able to look at things so differently because I've had so many different perspectives. I had a roommate, shout out to Eric, that was, he grew up the same way I grew up, hardcore Democrat. He grew up hardcore Republican. So when Obama was running, we would have those conversations. Like, me and him were cool enough to where we could have the uncomfortable conversations. And he would be like, you know, you're only voting for Obama because he's black. And I was like, yeah. And he was like, you don't think that's right. And I was
like, I'm only voting because he's black and he's a Democrat.
Yeah, is that? And he's a Democrat.
Excuse me.
But it's funny because we had a conversation and he was like, why is it okay for you to only vote for him because he's black and it's not okay for a white person to not vote for him because he's black. And I told him, I said, well, the difference is that, but these are the uncomfortable conversations that, you know, people will look at.
Right,
you,
he wasn't asking it to be nasty.
He was literally asking, like, why is that okay? Like, why is it okay for you guys to pick somebody because of race, but us to not pick somebody because of race? And I had to tell him, I said, you know, if I have a son, I can't tell my son that he can become president and believe it because we've never had one. You can look at your son and tell your son that he can become president. I said, so even if this nigga sucks when he gets in, which I don't think he will, but even if he does, at least I got past that part. You know what I mean? Right. And it's crazy because when I told him that, he went out and voted for Obama.
Wow.
He went out and voted for Obama. Yeah, that was enough for him because he was very big on family. You know what I mean?
And he never thought about the impact that it would have.
He never thought about the impact that it would have just to have a black president. And you know what I mean?
But so, what about the deeper part too that I always point out too? Not only did Obama have such a huge effect on what black parents could show their children, but what about what white parents could show their children?
1,000%.
Oh,
yeah.
The most powerful man in the land is black.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, now listen, that led to some really horrifying repercussions, of course.
For sure.
But it also led to some really beautiful things.
1,000%.
That we haven't necessarily reaped yet. But
exactly.
It's there.
And I truly believe that the younger generation, because of that, exactly what you said, it's like, now you can't look at a black person as less than because you were
when you were 10
for 8 years, the most powerful person on the entire planet was a black man. So from 10 to 18, which is your critical years, you know, that was the case. And for him, because we were so close, me saying that, you know, we were already damn near like family. So he's thinking of it in the terms of like, you know, damn. So, you know, if Rob had a son right now, like, I couldn't even look his son in the eyes and tell him that. You know what I mean? So that was enough for him. And
wow.
He went out and he voted for Obama.
All right. So back to the story with the coach, though.
Yes. Yeah.
So your mom comes to town. She's nice with the pen. She's like, we got to figure this out. And what did you do?
So she writes out a letter to the NAACP. She talks to my teammates. She gets them to sign off as witnesses and whatnot. She doesn't go talk to my coach because I beg her not to. I'm just like, you know, like, come in town, we can figure it out. So we go stay at a hotel, writes it out. She talks to my teammates. They share some of their stories. She writes out like this 12-page report to the NAACP. This is what's scary. So we turn it into the NAACP. They send a letter back to the school immediately. So shout out to them. It was fast. Like, it was like, nah, we're not rocking. Like, right away. They send a letter back to the school. And so I forgot what they call it in college, but the head person at the school, I don't think it's like a dean or something, but whatever that title is.
Chancellor or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. You know what I mean? So they see it and they call me and the coach into this office and we have a conversation. And their conversation with me is, if this can just go away, you can go home and we will just give you your degree. That's the conversation. It's like, if this can just go away, you can leave school early. It was like February, right after the school, I mean, right after the season ended. You can go home and we'll just give you your degree. But we just don't want to, like, deal with this. So instead of...
But like, why would you leave?
So for me, they knew that I wanted to leave because I had in the letter, I was talking about like the mental issues, like kind of like struggles I was going through even being there and how I didn't want to stay. I just wanted to go home.
Okay.
So they knew that was like a soft spot for me. It's like, I just want to go home. Like, I'm tired of being out here. Everything closed at 8, y'all food. You know what I mean? Like, I want to go home.
I need more restaurant options.
Like, I just want
to
go home.
The racism's bad, but the food choices are horrible.
Like, racism mixed with this is crazy.
It's
like,
too much.
It's just way too much. You know what I mean? Like, everything closes at 7. This is insane. So they knew that was my soft spot. And this is one thing. I don't have many regrets in life, but this is one thing I regretted. I took them up on that option and I went home. And it wasn't because I was scared to fight that fight. And if I could go back now, I would do it just because I would think about all the future, you know what I mean, endeavors. Like, he probably still wouldn't be there. But for me, I was being selfish. I was like, ain't no black people here anyway. Like, y'all whites could deal with that shit. Like, I just want to go home. You know what I mean? And so I took him up on that.
And what year was this?
This was 2014.
No, but what year in your college?
Oh, my senior year. My senior year.
So it was your senior year.
Yeah, so I was done playing basketball, and I already had some overseas tryouts set up for when I got back to L.A. anyway. So for me, I was just like, you know what? I just want to go home. And so I took him up. And it's something that I regret because there's going to be other kids that are black that go out there and they're going to have to go through the same shit.
And he's still coaching.
He's still coaching. I check every year because I'm just blown that he's still coaching.
Are there black players on the team?
2 years ago, I checked the actual roster, and there were two black players on the team. So I can only imagine, you know what I mean? But I will say that the two black players on the team were from out there, so maybe they're used to it. Like, maybe it's not as bad as, you know, with me, but I was the first kid from, like, a urban environment that he had ever recruited.
Do you know how much of it got... But he was in the meeting, though, right?
Yeah, he was in the meeting, yeah.
So he was aware of what happened.
He was aware. He was very aware of what happened, and he didn't even, like... He wasn't even, like, sympathetic in the meeting.
He never... Did he ever apologize, or...
Never, ever.
He never reached out afterwards?
That's what I'm saying. Like, he's never reached out, never did anything, and it was just a situation where, you know... This is every, like, even the chancellor, whoever it is, they weren't even, like, surprised. It was just kind of like, you know, like, what can we do to make this
go away? How good a program is it?
Like, we were actually nice. I will say that. We was, like, number two in the nation. Like, we was.
So is that part of the thing that they actually, it's one of the things in that town that actually matters?
Yeah. It's, like, the only thing in that town that matters is, like, the basketball program. You know what I mean? Like, when we had games, the entire town comes out. Like, people knew me by first name basis out there. Like, wherever I went, I got free food and shit. Like,
so it is a, like, thing. So yeah. They're happy with what the program
they're
happy, is.
They're very ecstatic with what the program is. That is. A element of it. You know what I mean?
Did you see the Bob Huggins story recently?
I did not.
So you know Bob Huggins, who was coach forever at Cincinnati, and now this was at whatever, West Virginia. So first, I guess like 2 months ago, he called into a radio show in, I think it was in Cincinnati, they called him. You know, like probably the old radio show he used to go on, but they're still cool with him.
Gotcha.
And they called him and he starts talking shit and he's messing around and he says crazy shit. He talked about, he used the F word slur for gay people about, he probably knows Catholic F words, blah, blah. Crazy. I never heard anything like it. Because he hit Catholics and gay people in the same line. I never even heard anything like it before. I was like, oh, wow.
He's sweeping through. Yeah.
And the guy's like, oh, and they kind of like laughed it off. And he had to put out an apology, whatever. He kept the job at West Virginia.
Bro.
And I'm thinking, I'm like, but if you're a gay student, a gay Catholic student. Like, if you're anyone there at West Virginia, of which I'm guessing all those people exist, it's a state school.
Yeah.
Like, but they kept him. And then, like, 6 weeks later, he got hit with, like, a vicious DUI. And now he's out. The vicious homophobia wasn't enough. Yeah, but when you add the DUI on top of it.
Yeah.
But I say that because to a bigger degree than in out there in... Orange City, Iowa.
Yeah.
In West Virginia.
Yeah.
I mean, that basketball program's life.
No,
so,
for
like,
sure.
You're going to do everything you can to keep the big. These coaches, like,
they're celebrities. You know what I'm saying?
And at the big schools, they're the highest paid employee in the state.
Employee in the state. Like, this is their city. Like, I used to, like, because it was also a Christian school. And, I would go, because I was over 21 my senior year, and I would go have to drive like 12 miles to go to a Walmart to get like liquor if I wanted to drink on the weekend. And there would be people in that town that would like text them like, yo, your player's in here. Like, just to let you know, like, your player's in here. Like, that's how, I'm saying that that's how prominent he was. Like, everybody knew who he was. There was nothing that you can do in it. So that was kind of like his town, you know what I mean? And I also believe that that's why he coached there for so long, because this is a very successful coach. Could have moved up into Division I easily a long time ago, but I just think that that was, you know, that was his realm, you know what I mean? And he was comfortable there, so, yeah.
So you go home to Carson, and how serious does the music thing pick up pretty quickly?
It picks up, like, right away. Like, right away I get there, my agent calls, he's like, you know, I got this contract for Grease. I'm like, nah, I don't want to do it. I'm a rap. He was pissed, because he was working on that contract for a long time.
Could you have made good money in Greece?
That was one of the reasons I didn't want to. I would have been starting from the bottom and having to build back up.
What would that have looked like?
It was like $1,200 a month, but they also give you like room and board. Right. Yeah,
it's not real money.
It's not real money at all. But
like,
it was
you stack
like
a few thousand dollars.
Exactly.
It.
But it's like, if you come out here and average 20, then maybe you can, you know, next time make $3,000 a month, and you know, just kind of slowly work your way up. And
I was just like,
I'm not.
That's not the basketball dream anyone signed up for
in any type of way.
And at that point, you know. This isn't some path to the NBA.
I'm not going to the NBA.
This is like, just a path to trying to get to a decent job.
At this point, John Wall's coming down the middle, right hand, left hand, you know, doing whatever the hell. I'm like, I'm not going to the NBA.
Right. I would have already been on a different path.
I would have already been having, you know, these mixtapes and highlight tapes out. I'm like,
right.
Yeah, this isn't worth it. So I can go to Greece and not speak it would have
been
any
an experience.
Language. It would have been dope. You know what I mean?
You would have had some upside, I'm sure. Yeah,
but I can also, you know, just save money and go to Greece. Like,
correct. Now you can go to Santorini, you get a room and relax.
Exactly, yeah.
So how did you have a team yet of people trying to help you with the rap?
I just had the homies, but I had graduated and I had a degree in business management. I double majored in business management and sports management. You know, got the degrees for free. Thank you, coach. And but I say that to say I knew that I had to come in and attack it differently than every other LA rapper that was doing it. So I knew I had to be consistent. I knew I had to invest in myself. And so I came in, got a job, and just started pouring into my music career.
What was the job?
I was working at as like a sales rep for like this turf tolerant landscaping company. Basically, California's going through a drought. They come in, rip up your grass, put down like mulch or you know, artificial grass, whatever you want. And then we would collect the rebate from the state because the state was offering rebates.
So this is just a straight up desk.
It's just
phone
desk,
call.
You know, cubicle. I would be there, headset on, listening to music in one ear.
All this, though, still goes back kind of to you moving to Carson.
1,000%.
Because that's some very middle class, educated,
exactly.
Go grab a quick job.
Exactly. And it's like a lot of the other artists, because some of my cousins were artists too, but you know, they're, you know, making the money, doing other things. You know what I mean?
And that's a pain in the ass, bro.
For sure.
You might make more money and get to have more glamour.
Yeah.
But like the idea that you could be just doing your jobby job while building your career. I mean, you could look across. I mean, it sounds like, you know, it's the same as Lil Dicky's story.
It's very similar. It's funny because I'm a Lil Dicky fan and it's very similar to his story.
You get a job. I mean? You're able to get a job. And
exactly.
Then just work on.
And just work on the music and
not feel the stresses of like, oh my God, if this doesn't go through, what's
exactly.
Gonna happen?
And I'll tell other people like, that shit is hard. Cause I tried to sell weed. That shit is hard. Everybody got a weed man already. Shit way harder than selling grass.
Because everybody needs, selling grass is way harder than selling
everybody
grass.
I hit up to buy some weed already had a weed man. And then the homie that was doing it with me, he was a smoker. So he was smoking up all the shit that we had. Like, I'm like, we're losing. We're in the hole right now. Like,
well, like who in California? Who in California, in L.A.,
doesn't
have
a
weed man?
Doesn't have three. You know what I mean? Like, they got one, and if he's not around, they got another one.
Not to mention, you're edging right up near the time of legalized and medicinal.
Yeah,
like,
so it's like, you know, half of the people are going to the shop. The other people already got, you know what I mean? The other homies already got a weed man. And I'm also, like, I didn't grow up as the kid that was selling drugs and whatnot, so I'm also trying to, like, tell people, y'all, I said, and they laughing at me, like, nigga, what are you doing? Like, you know what
right.
I mean? Like,
that's not you.
Yeah, they're like, that's not you. Like, why are you doing this? You know what I mean? So I did that for, like, 2 months, and I
so you're was, stacking. So yeah. Then you start stacking the paper at the job.
Yeah.
And you said, and you're pouring money into what, studio time?
Studio time, music videos. Back then, it wasn't as easy to shoot a music video. Like, everybody didn't just have a camera, so.
What's the early video you put out? It was our first?
Yeah, so the first video I put out was actually Better Days, which was, like, one of my highest streaming songs now, because it re-dropped on the album that Top re-put out. And then,
but it was really one
that
of
was
your
a
first.
Single. That was literally the first video that I shot and released was Better Days. Very
2 million views.
2 million views.
I'm guessing it didn't get most of those views in the early days.
It did not. We had about 1,600 views when it dropped the first time.
Really?
About 20 million streams right now and 2 million views on YouTube. My like one of my highest streaming songs still as of today.
And so this is what year?
This was, well, that one is the TDE version. So
this is the TDE version?
They had us take down the other one. But even the concept for this video is the exact same concept that I used for the original. It was just a bigger budget. So
this just looks like
the concept is going to this liquor store. I went to the same liquor store trying to get with your girl arguing, go in the liquor store, come out, get shot. And then you're rapping the second verse, like bleeding on the ground, bleeding out. But my version of it was shitty because we only had $1,100 budget. And then theirs was a lot better than my version.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, so we can't see the old boot.
I don't have. I wish I did have it because I could show you, you know, the difference.
Are all your old initial videos gone?
All of them. Top came through and swept all that shit.
Yeah. He was like, we're not having people Google you and find this bullshit.
Yeah, we're not. Yeah. He was like, so shitty ass music video. That shit.
You're with TDE now.
Yeah, exactly. So he swept through all that shit.
And so you started getting shows?
So I started getting shows. But then I also, there was a promoter out there, Sean Healy, and he would be like, the booking agent for anybody coming through LA. So labels will hit them up and be like, oh, got this artist coming through LA. What venues you got? And so I also got cool with Sean. And so Sean would put me on as an opener.
So you get to open. So you'd be exactly. You be the random act.
Be the random act.
That when artists are like, who the fuck is this on my bill?
Exactly.
What the fuck is Reason?
And I would always start off my show with Better Days because I knew that was a song that would captivate people. And I got a lot of fans. That's really how I grew my fan base. I was performing like every single week.
And always hitting Better Days.
And I was always starting off with Better. You know, because you're the opener, you're the random opener. Everybody, while you walk on stage, everybody's getting a drink and stuff like that. And I would always start off with Better Days. And by the end of the song, I would have the crowd at least for another, you know, the rest of my set. And I would have a 20-minute set, but I would always do only like 12 minutes of the set.
Genius.
Just
genius.
Up, in and out.
You know what?
You just want me over right now, really. Because I swear to God.
They didn't come for me. I'm going to give y'all my best three or four.
Bro.
I'm out of here,
So I used to. I don't do it as much anymore, certainly, yeah. But I hosted a lot of shows.
Gotcha.
I did our SOBs showcase. I did so many different concerts. And when people would get on as the opener, I would always be like, but how long are you doing?
Yeah.
They'd be like, oh, you know. 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I'd be like, bro, I don't know any of your songs and I'm the host. You could get that down to 8.
Seriously, pick your best three. The ones that you know for a fact are going to work.
And then you walk off and people go, oh, that shit was dope. I wish it didn't end.
My name is Reason. I appreciate y'all every single time.
And then they come up to you afterwards and they're like, wow, I really like that.
So I had printed versions of my CD before it even dropped. And I would tell them like, yo, I got an album dropping in like 2 months. But, you know.
Have you given youngsters this advice?
I have. They don't listen.
No one wants to hear it.
They show up to the show. They got 30 niggas with them. They like, my niggas came to see me rock. Like, even if
it's
crowded,
like you have them, they're already your fans.
They're already gonna listen to your shit. You know what I mean?
There's no amount that's too short. Yeah. You could tell me I'm doing one song. I'm like, that sounds great. Yeah. One song, yeah. You might win someone over with one song.
You might win them over with one song.
But it's so hard. You have to be. And then on the flip side of that coin, I've seen headliners who are amazing. Who do 55, and I'm like, that show could have been 30.
Yeah, for sure.
I didn't need 55.
For sure, because I'm a fan of you, but I'm only a fan of the 30. You know what I mean? And there's the other 25 of you that, you know, I maybe don't listen to. I skip the song or whatever. So,
matter of fact, so the two concerts this summer that everyone's obviously talking about are Beyonce and yes. Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
They're running this summer. Until Drake. Now yeah. Drake's becoming a thing.
Yeah.
Although, with all due respect to Drizzy's doing the arena tour.
Yeah.
Taylor and Beyonce
they're doing stadiums, yeah.
For both of them, though, and I may see Beyonce, I'm definitely not seeing Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Everyone's giving such praise. They're playing. They're doing 3-hour concerts. I'm like, I don't know that I need that.
Three? Bro, if Pac came back from the dead right now, I don't want to see Pac on stage.
I don't need
3 hours of Pac.
I swear to God, after an hour, you'd be like, no, this is a long show.
I'd be like, hey, Pac,
I can't think of... Like, I feel like if Michael came back from the dead, I would want to do 2 hours.
I was gonna say, yeah.
I think of Mike.
Yeah, of Mike. Yeah.
Taylor's only been in the game for, I think, like 13 years strong, mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah.
How is she at 3 hours already?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's always less is more. You know what I mean? And I realized that super, super early on just from me going to shows, because before I started doing the shows, I started just going to random shows and watching any artist that was in town, I'd go watch. And I noticed that I was like, man, like, I probably get like bored, even if I'm a fan of this artist, maybe like 22 minutes in, unless I'm like a diehard fan of them. You know what I mean? And so I would get on stage and do my anywhere between 8 to 12 minutes, depending. And I would literally do, depending on how I would have 3 records ready. And if the crowd was really engaged, I'd do like one more record. And me and my DJ would know, you know what I mean? Like we'd be able to kind of read it and be like, yo, you know, we're going to get out of here, or let's do this very last record and get up off the stage. So I would always do like 8 to 12 minutes. And I built a big fan base doing that.
Just doing that.
The very first artist I actually opened up for was Joe Budden. That was the first one that I opened up
for.
Wow. Yeah. So I opened up for him at Los Globos.
So was that full circle when you went on Joe's podcast?
Super, super. Yeah, it was super like full circle. I actually had like a picture from the show that, because we took a picture together after the show and I showed him and he was like, boy, I was high as hell during this picture. Like he was like, I don't even remember this night. But
so which version of Joe was a bigger dick? Original Joe at the club?
Oh, or original, because he was super scarred then. He still carries the trauma.
He's still crazy.
He's still crazy and carries the trauma, but that's my dog now. He was an asshole then. Like I had to like fight to take a picture with him. I'm like, damn.
Did
like,
you really?
Like, yeah, like he was not fucking with me. I
I'm like, God damn.
You should, hold on. You should see this motherfucker Joe at Summer Jam.
I believe it.
No, Joe at Summer Jam this year.
Oh, this year?
No, this year. Have you seen the picture? No, first of all, he was a great hang, but have you seen what the fuck Joe wore to Summer Jam this year?
Nah, I didn't see it.
Yo, my man, how would you even describe that, Joe? I don't want to go dashiki. It was like a big... It looked like he was about to go pray at Mecca. Like, it was like a big, white... It was insane. Shout out to Joe.
Joe is funny. I told him... because I just did his pod like 2 days ago, and I told him, I said, bro... You didn't need to be successful as an artist because, like, you're like the way you are. Like, if you would have been like a massive hit art, like, it would have been insane. You were already crazy. You know what I mean?
That is like, such a good point.
Yeah, like if you were walking around with Drake level hits, like that, you could just, you know, pop out at any time. Like, Joe would have been a menace.
But you want to know something funny? So, as you may or may not know, depending how big a fan of Joe you are, me and him have super long history. Goes back like 20 years.
Yeah.
And before I ever knew any other rappers. And we have this interview from 02 or 03 when Pump It Up was on fire.
Yeah.
I did a couple of interviews with him at that time. That's how he became like an early rap friend of mine.
Gotcha.
Yo, when he was scorching, like I was just a random DJ doing XM at the time. He was cool as a motherfucker.
Yeah.
It's really interesting, actually. Like, he didn't have... Now that I'm thinking about it, when I remember Joe from that era, I was an absolute nobody to him, and he gave me zero dickhead vibe at all. He would come do my show, hang out for an hour, talk shit. Now, granted, he thought I was very funny, and he was one of, as much as I always try to take credit for helping Joe start his podcast, Joe was one of the first people, even though he may have not said anything to me or like, went and did anything about it.
Yeah.
The way he treated me showed me like he fucked with me.
Yeah, exactly.
He clearly knew that even though I was a nobody, I was meant to have a bigger platform.
Like your energy and conversation.
He
stuff
got
like
it.
That. Yeah,
and so it still helped me and I'm grateful for it. But he was actually really chill when he was smoking hot as an artist at that time.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But he was only one single in.
So he
might have still just been on the high of like.
Yeah, like I'm here and I've made
right,
it.
And
you
it's
know
fucking
what I mean?
Pop. Yeah. Now, you fast forward a year later after the Jay-Z shit, all the different shit had happened, he might have become a miserable wretch already. Yeah. I don't really remember.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think a lot of it just came from Joe like going through the industry and, you know, becoming scarred by that. Because even like I said, like that night he was an asshole, but like the moment I met Joe as an artist, man, he didn't even know who I was. Rory's actually the one that brought me over to the pod and then I met him. But the moment I met him, he just showed me love and supported literally any and everything that I was doing. And I'm super grateful for Joe because he's given me a lot of advice and how to maneuver and, you know, dealing with different frustrations and stuff like that.
And now, like me, you're stuck in the position of having a relationship with Rory and Joe.
Yeah. And
here we are again.
Yeah, but my sense of humor is so dark that it's just funny to me.
Right. Like, you just laugh at it.
I just laugh at it. Like, this is really hilarious. Like, you know what I mean? And they're both like petty in a way. So they take like, it's funny because like they're over it. So it's not like a thing that, you know what I mean? Of course they don't get along, but you know, they both just take their little shots or whatever. And it's just
Joe
funny
has the weirdest beef with everybody.
Yeah.
It's all like not that serious, but also real at the same time.
It exists.
Right. It exists, but it's never that serious. Yeah. And by the way, at this point, I just try my best whenever someone gives me the reason to talk about Joe.
Yeah.
I just do it on the podcast. Cause I know it's guaranteed for some cheap clicks. People always seem to think that we hate each other no matter what. So I've seen that before, Rosenberg and Joe. They say, when he was being a dick to Logic a few months ago, and I just jumped out. I was like, can you leave this man alone? He's not bothering you.
Here's
what I don't understand. I'm not saying everyone has to be a Logic fan.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that Logic doesn't have like traits that could make him off-putting for a certain kind of rap fan.
Yeah.
I do get it.
Mm-hmm.
But I always found his hate on Logic's rapping skills to
his
be weird.
His rapping skills, yeah. Because I'm not a Logic fan of the music or the person. Me and Logic have our own thing.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, like a little thing. It's
Reason
not
and
that,
Logic? You guys should go together.
I literally know. I've heard every single joke about it.
I thought I was so creative. I was like, why would Reason and Logic not get along?
I've heard every single thing. But I do agree with you on his rap skills.
Just straight,
I can't say that he's not a good rapper. I can't say that.
I just found that part so weird. Like, you could have a million reasons not to like him if you want, but like, Joe would be like, he sucks. I was like, as a rapper?
Yeah.
The one thing about me, before I got into, you know, knew him at all, I was just like, wow, this guy clearly has a solid voice and he knows how to, he understands something about rapping.
He can put words together. He says what he thinks. Like, I was an early Logic fan. I was an early Logic fan.
And let me guess, that's part of how it led to you and him not being good.
No, it wasn't necessarily that. It was. This is the thing. It was kind of my fault. I'm big on accountability, so it was kind of my fault.
I love this. Yeah, this is what we're here for. What happened?
It was kind of my fault. So I had a record called The Soul Part 2, and at this stage, I went on Joe's podcast, and Joe accidentally called me Logic on the podcast, like just like speaking too fast with like Logic, and then he made the reason joke, and he was like, so I had the song called The Soul Part 2, and I had a line during the end, and I was like, because after this, fans started running with it and being funny. I was
so
like,
talking shit and calling you Logic?
Calling me, you know what I mean? Because Joe's podcast is on fire, so it's a bunch of fans that met me from that podcast.
And by the way, and Joe has his share of people who are fucking, all due respect, real quick.
Yeah.
He has normal listeners, and he has fucking losers who are just going to obsess and say whatever
and
he says.
And that's what it was. It was those. So I had a line where I said, see, y'all mistake my name for Logic. You got me fucked up. How you compare a nigga to take from a culture versus a nigga that's for it? So I started it. You know what I'm saying? I started it because I did feel that way. I felt that way. And I'm very, unlike the where the rap game is now, everybody is like, it's soft. Like when people have issues, they do subliminals. Nobody really throws the direct shot. Like, so for me, I didn't, how direct I am as a person in real life, I didn't even consider that as like a shot. I considered it like, this is the narrative. Everybody says it's the narrative. I'm just speaking on like a narrative that already exists. And so, you know, Logic fans, was pissed off about it. And I took accountability. I was like, yo, if y'all feel a way about it, you know what I mean? Like I apologize. Logic did nothing to me. I said that or whatever. And so Logic, the issue that I had with Logic after that was...
Well, let's start here. Don't forget that.
Yeah.
But real quick, why do you feel that Logic takes from the culture where you give to it?
Because I was an early Logic fan and Logic made his career off of, I'm black, my dad's black, you know... That entire thing, I can say nigga, like all of these things. And I felt like once he got big, it became like put the white hat on and be able to get through that and love everybody. His album was called Everybody. And it was like, it was no more about black plight. It was about, you know, gays go through this, you know, white, lower class people go through this. It was talking about everybody. And I felt like don't wear the black hat to get where you want to get. And then, you know, because that is the issue. Like, if you're black, you can't take it off. You know what I mean? And so we can't just take it off when we want to, but you can use that to build up and then, you know, do that. So that was my issue with
okay.
it. Yeah. So, you know,
I'm not saying okay to agree.
No. You're just saying you understand what I'm saying.
I understand the point you're making. Yeah. I think there's more in there to get into, but I hear what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah, for sure. And that's what I'm saying. And I'm also not the type of person to think that I'm just automatically right. So that was the reason why I went out and, I apologize because I was like, you know, like if y'all feel away in this deeply, because the Logic fans were just like at me. It's like if y'all feel away that deeply, you know, like I apologize. You know, it wasn't meant to be, you know, taken that way or whatever. So that's what I said. So Logic came out. He did the smart thing and said, I don't know who Reason is, which he knows who I am because Logic follows TDE very, 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 very closely. So I let it go. But my issue with him is that he kept doing this thing where I don't know who Reason is, and then he would go in an interview and make jokes about me. And then go in another interview and be like, I don't know who Reason is. And then he would go in another interview and make jokes about me. So for me, I'm like, yo, if we're going to do the rap thing, let's just do the rap thing. But don't play the in-between game, you know what I mean? And you just not knowing who I am. Like he did a sit down with Rory and them, and he was just like, you know, I don't know who this kid Reason is, but you know, like, let him know, like, you know, I love him and this and this and this. And then when the camera shuts off, he's telling Rory, like, you know, like fuck that guy and this. But he doesn't know, like, Rory's my guy. Like, right, you know what I mean? Like, I'm cool with Joe and Rory, but Rory's like really, really my guy. And so for me, I'm just like, yo, if we're gonna do the rap thing, let's do the rap thing, but don't play in between, you know what I mean? And not like, what are we doing? And so that was my issue. When I actually started having an issue with Logic,
I understand that.
Yeah,
that makes sense. This all seems like it'd be either it could be fun through rap, or a very easy conversation.
No, for sure. Like for me, it was like, and I even reached out to him and was like, "Yo, like let's just have a conversation." But he'll ignore those things and then talk about the other things. So for me, I was just like,
he ignored the attempt to reach out.
Yeah. So for me, I was just like,
I have to admit, love you, Logic. I hate when people do that though.
Yeah, like it's like, but he's literally online making videos like, Reason, let's go out and have dinner together. But then you see me reaching out.
I've had this exact experience.
Yeah, like it's like it was just weird to me. So for me, I'm like, let's either do the fun rap thing, because none of it is real. It's not real life.
This is true
shit. Exactly. Yeah. So I'm like, let's either do the fun rap thing and make it fun for everybody. That way everybody is now having fun. Or let's just have a conversation and be over it. You know what I mean? And so that kind of went on throughout not this last album he dropped, but the previous album. That went on through like his entire rollout. You know what I mean?
Oh, so, shit.
Yeah, so, but I blame
Joe and Rory. all right, real quick, tell people the name of the album. You got to go to ESPN, I'm told. So yes, tell people the name of the album and the date.
Name of the album is Porches. It's coming out on July 28th. I don't have any, like, witty, you know.
You don't need to have anything witty. Honestly, like, I just going through your catalog, man, for the people listening to this podcast right now, if y'all have never spent time with Reason, like, you're going to fuck with it. And especially if you're feeling, I already started listening to a new one. A lot of the listeners right now of the podcast, y'all are high off that Killer Mike Michael album right now.
Which is fire.
Which is pure fire. Yeah. I think you'll enjoy Reason as a next place to go into something that's thought-provoking
that.
And fucking dope. So, good luck with the album, and thank you for coming by.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
TDE Zone, Reason.